Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. I hope you enjoyed our show last week. Our guest was talked about meditation, and it was a very interesting show about consciousness and things like that. So if you didn't get a chance to listen, it is on the archives. But tonight we're moving in a little bit of a different direction. We're talking about UFOs, which is actually my favorite topic. And in fact, our guest is, I'm really, really excited to have him tonight. He is Jesse Marcel Jr., the son of Jesse Marcel Sr., who was the first military officer to actually visit the Roswell UFO crash site. And our guest tonight has written a very interesting new book called The Roswell Legacy, The Untold Story of the First Military Officer at the 1947 Crash Site. I'm sure all of you out there listening know about Roswell, and you probably know that there has been dozens of books, literally, written about this subject. Interestingly, almost none of these books has been written by someone who is actually there, who experienced these events. And that's what makes this book different and so much more exciting and profound than all the others, is it was written by someone who actually handled the wreckage. It's a very, very exciting and profound book, and I just want to read a little bit from the foreword, the introduction, which gives you an idea of, you know, what's this book is about. And this is from the introduction by Jesse Marcel Jr. Mine is a story of actually seeing and handling artifacts from the site of my fascination with things that neither I nor anyone else on Earth had ever beheld. I will try to communicate the depth of my father's frustration, not with those who smeared his good name, but with the complete abandonment of truth in the telling of a story so profound that it could drastically change the way we humans deal with each other. At its core, this is the story of a military officer's integrity and a legacy of truth that must not be withheld. It is also my attempt to repay a debt to a man who taught me the value of honor, the absolute necessity of truthfulness, and the concept of respect. That such an attempt inevitably falls short of the mark is a testament to the integrity of the man himself. I feel the readers deserve to know the facts, and I also believe my father deserves the respect long denied him by the government's desire to silence what he saw and knew. And this is just the beginning. It's an amazing story, and I'm so honored to have our guest on tonight, Jesse Marcel Jr. Thank you for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
You know, wow, what a story. I mean, I was skeptical of UFOs growing up, and it was, let me see, age 20 or so that I found out my friends and family were having encounters. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, changed my life completely. So I just cannot imagine how it must have been for you at age 11 and your father. So, and, you know, when I saw the Roswell movie, Roswell, that's the first time I really got an idea of how it affected your father and your family. So what was it like, you know,
well,
being that
you know,
young? And
it opened my eyes to a lot of things, you know. I realized from that time on, you know, that our civilization is not the only one around. In other words, there's other civilizations inhabiting other solar systems in our galaxy and other galaxies. So I realized that, again, we're not by ourselves, that there's certainly a lot of different life forms out there, different civilizations.
Right. Well, your father, you know, despite being ridiculed to some extent in the press, I think people respect him now, but we should just let people know just how you know, many honors he's had and what his credentials are. So you want to explain, like, part of his career?
Well, he was the intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group. That's the group that that ended the war with Japan by dropping the nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And these were all hand-picked personnel, and my dad was the intelligence officer for the 509th. And as such, you know, he was not one who was going to shirk his duty, and he had a lot of training. His credentials were, he went to intelligence school. He's actually on the staff of the Air Force Intelligence School, and he went to radar school where he learned all about radar targets and their uses. So he knew what he was talking about and was not given to wild, imaginary findings.
Right. Well, he had 15 awards for combat credit, 15 decorations, and bronze star, service stars, and it goes on and on. So
yes, he was a decorated war hero.
Wow. So what you say, his he changed, this whole event changed him. I think you really got that across in the book. So it started with this whole incident where he brought home wreckage. You want to describe what that was like? That, I mean, that's an amazing scene in the book, and just an amazing scene in history, for that matter. What happened?
Well, you know, what he did, he was sent out to the desert area where this thing had crashed by Colonel Blanchard, who was the base commander for the 509th. And he picked up a representative portion of this along with a CIC agent, also a Sheridan Cavalry. I think that was a forerunner of the CIA. But these two gentlemen went out to the field, and they both picked up portions of this, whatever it was, it crashed out there. And as it turns out, our house was on the way into the air base from the field, and my dad knew this was something that was very unique, and I'd probably never see anything like this again. And he wanted myself and my mother to see this, and that's what he did. He brought it by the house. It was late in the evening, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, when he finally came in and woke my mother and myself up to look at this peculiar metal foil wreckage that he found out in the desert.
Wow. So what did it look like? I mean, you handled it.
Well, there's what he had done. He had pre-positioned this metal fragments on the floor of our kitchen, and there are several boxes of it that he brought in, and there's a lot of foil-like material, which, you know, was kind of unusual, but, you know, it could be confused with the aluminum foil of today, you know, the kitchen wrap of today, but it didn't have the same consistency. It just didn't feel the same way. I guess the most unusual part of the wreckage that I saw was the beam type structures that had symbols or some sort of writing along the inner surface of this. And I thought at first this was like Egyptian hieroglyphics. It wasn't that, but it's more like geometric symbols, you know, like truncated pyramids, ball circles, ellipsoid, you know, various things in various configurations imprinted along the inner edge of this. And it did have a peculiar color to it, like a purple-violet hue that was semi-reflective of light. Again, there's also some old plastic-type material, too, that I thought looked like a Bakelite, you know, which is kind of a plastic of the day. But the most unusual thing were the beams with the writing on it.
Wow. So then he packed it all up and drove away with all of it?
Yeah. Didn't keep any of it. Had I done so, I wouldn't have it now, I'll tell you that. But I mean, we looked at it for 15 or 20 minutes, but it really created an impression with me that stays with me till this day. So we looked at it. You know, first thing he wanted us to do was to look for any electronic components, like vacuum tubes, resistors, or condensers, but there wasn't anything like that. And he already knew there wasn't, but he wanted me to be satisfy my curiosity on that. So we looked at it for this period of time, and he then put it back in the boxes and put it back in the car, and he took it back to the airbase. I'm not sure whether it was that night or maybe early the next morning when he left, but he took it back to the airbase so that Colonel Blanchard could take a look at this also.
Did he tell you that he thought it was extraterrestrial? I mean, what did you think it was?
I guess the excitement that he had was very catching, because it caught on to me, and I think he used words like parts of a flying saucer, or words to that effect. But he was very excited and wanted us to be sure to look at this, because we'll never see this again. And he was right.
Wow. You may have actually, like, seen one of these UFOs back in, right before this incident, before the Roswell crash, you saw one of these, a bright object move across the sky as a kid?
I'm sorry, we have coming back. What was that again?
You did actually see a UFO before you actually handled the wreckage?
No. I never saw a UFO. No, I've never seen a UFO before or actually since. Nothing that I couldn't really identify for sure as a UFO. I've seen some strange things, maybe some lights in the sky that you couldn't identify, but what does that mean? But no, I've never seen a UFO before that.
Right. Well, your father had a lot of brothers and sisters. Did he mention this to any of them? Or did they talk about it?
Absolutely not. What he did, after Colonel Blanchard saw this, they realized that they had something very unusual in their hands. And so Colonel Blanchard instructed the public information officer, Walter Hout, to make a release to the newspaper that the Air Force captured a flying saucer. It's a famous newspaper. And he also wanted the General Ramey, who was the 8th Air Force commander at Fort Worth, to see this too. So he ordered my dad to fly portions of this wreckage under guard in a V-29 to Fort Worth Army Air Field so that General Blanchard could see this. And that's exactly what he did. He brought it in to General Blanchard. There's a very famous photograph of my dad holding up portions of what looked like some wreckage of some kind, but that was not what we saw in our kitchen. That was a radar target that he was holding after that picture.
Wow. Have you seen the movie Roswell?
I have, yes.
Would you say that it's a fair treatment of your father's experience?
They use some poetic license, of course, to make it more interesting. Basically, it was how it happened. The pictures of the movie was fairly factual. They did make it more interesting by adding, portions like there's a get-together with the 509th after that, a reunion, but that didn't happen. But that's, again, just part of the story.
Right. Well, did you talk about the incident later on as time went on?
Well, what happened at Fort Worth is that General Ramey realized that this is something that he did not want to be released to the public attention at that time. So he ordered my dad to be part of a cover-up that the Air Force came out with a story that this was just misidentification of a radar target, which, of course, was laughable because my dad went to radar school, so he would have realized what a radar target looked like. But anyway, he ordered my dad to never talk about this and to instruct anybody he had come into contact with to never talk about it also. So when he came back from Fort Worth, he sat my mother and myself down and told us under no circumstances were we to ever talk about this again. Treat it like a non-event, and you can't talk about anything that didn't happen. So that's the way it stayed for many years. We scarcely mentioned amongst ourselves in the family. But there's no public talking about it, that's for sure.
Well, when Stanton Friedman came into the picture and he started interviewing your father, did he talk about it then?
What happened, I guess, is as years went on, my dad, he was a radio amateur. And he loved ham radio. So I guess he might have talked a little bit about the strange thing that he had seen in Roswell. And one of the people he talked to about this was a station manager in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And as it turned out, Stanton Friedman was giving a lecture about UFOs, and the station manager happened to be in the audience. And after Stanton gave him the talk, the manager came up to him and said, you need to talk to Jesse Marcel, because he saw one in Roswell, or something very strange in Roswell. So Stanton, after that, went down to Houma, Louisiana, where my folks live, and looked my dad up, and my dad divulged the story to Stanton. So Stanton was the first guy to really come up to really interview my dad about this.
Well, your father continued to have a military career, after this incident. And did he ever say that he learned?
Did he ever say that
he learned about other incidents like Roswell?
I don't think so. I don't think, at least none that he ever talked to me about, because, again, that was a taboo subject. We were not to talk about it. So he never mentioned anything more to me about that.
Right.
And that was 1978 when Stanton interviewed him about this. And I was gone out of the house by that time. I was up in Helena, Montana, living here. So by the time my dad started talking about it, I was out of the house.
Well, when he started talking about it, did he say he received any interference or surveillance or that type of thing? Have you had any?
Yeah, from the military?
Right.
No, I don't think so. He stayed in for several years. I think he got out in 1950. And I think he'd had enough of the military life by that time. He wanted to come back to home Louisiana to take care of his mother, who was still alive. But again, it didn't hurt his career. You know, he had all good OER reports, and there's no everything derogatory that happened to him because of this event. Now, the annual Colonel Blanchard had any derogatory effect on their military careers.
Well, what do you think of the Air Force releasing that report, Roswell case closed, you know, explaining everything away as
well,
a mobile balloon and dummies?
They don't protest too much, you know. They're still trying to get people to change their story on this thing because they're trying to cover up this Roswell thing. And as a matter of fact, I was interviewed for the case closed. Some lieutenant called me at my office, and he said, "Colonel, we need your help." And I said, "Well, what, lieutenant?" He said, "We understand you saw something in Roswell." And so I went through the whole story again, and the upshot was he didn't know what I saw. but they didn't include our interview with his interview with me in their case closed manual, but his lieutenant's conclusion was, "I don't know what you saw, but you saw something."
Huh.
But you know, they're still trying to cover the story up. As a matter of fact, the story has changed from a weather balloon radar target to a mogul balloon radar target, and they're the same thing. Of course, the mogul balloon project was top secret at that time because it was designed to lift up a bunch of microphones in the stratosphere to pick up any sonic vibrations from any possible nuclear detonations by the Soviet Union at that time. But it was still off-the-shelf material, you know, balloons, radar targets, and microphones and radios. So there's nothing secret about the material. It's just the mission that was secret.
Right. Well, they've continued to protest it.
Yeah, they do. As a matter of fact, some years ago, I went to Roswell for the 60th anniversary of this thing. And what happened was I got a call saying somebody knew I was going to go down to Roswell for this, for the celebration there. And they said, no, they wanted me to go to Socorro, New Mexico, and stay at a certain motel because, as it turns out, Professor Moore, Dr. Moore, who was head of the Mogul Project, lived in Socorro, New Mexico. So I was going to stay at this motel with my family, give Professor Moore a call so he could bring one of the radar targets out to me at the motel so I could look at it and satisfy myself that indeed I was mistaken all these years, it was just a radar target. And that's exactly what I did. I gave him a call, and he came right over to the motel with the radar target. And I said, "Dr. Moore," I said, "you know, that's still not what I saw." He said, "Well, I think it was." I said, "No, it wasn't." I tried to point out the differences between what I saw and the radar target, and he was not convinced at all about that. But they're still trying to make me change my story.
Right.
At least as of that time.
Do you think there's any chance that the government's ever going to come clean about Roswell? And why are they covering it up?
Well, that's a good question. I wish I knew. I think they should tell people what it was. I mean, there's no... I don't think there'll be a wholesale panic in the streets, you know, like there was, you know, in that War of the Worlds broadcast by Orson Welles in back in the 30s. I don't think that would happen. I think people would accept that, yeah, we know that there's UFOs out there, that they probably come from some other civilization, and it wouldn't cause any panic. So there's no reason for them to keep this a secret. And, you know, the other thing is, it's not just the United States either. It's just other world governments have this too. You know, the Russian government has material like this. I'm sure the English have this. The United Kingdom has this. France, you know, so I don't know why they're keeping it a secret.
Well, do you think they're ever going to let it go?
I think they have to. Sooner or later, it has to come out. And I would like it to come out before I pass from the scene, but even if it doesn't, I already know what it was. So I'm happy with that point.
Well, you have already seen it, after all. But, yeah... I think that you're right. I think it has to come out. I mean, if the government wants to remain in control of the situation.
I think, you know, they'll divulge this P-51 piecemeal, so that you know, they'll release some information now. You know, the United Kingdom did just release a lot of files that they had. So I think sooner or later, the governments of the world will release the pertinent information about this, and everybody will know that we're not alone. I think most people realize that anyway.
Right, right. Well, I think there's a lot of proof now that UFOs are real.
And
I think
there's
conclusive proof in the public arena.
Yeah. They've been around for a long time. You know, there's pictures of UFO, or at least flying saucers, in cave art. There are pictures of some of the masters painting paintings of the Madonna and Child with a UFO in the background. You know, they've been around a long time.
All right. Well, did your dad ever learn where the Roswell debris, was taken? And what happened to it?
I we never really talked about it that much. I don't know if he knew where they brought it. I think if you read what's been written about this thing, it was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base,
right,
where it may be, or maybe it may be in Sandy Labs in New Mexico, but who knows where it is. But it still exists, that's for sure, because we're not going to throw that away.
Well, what do you think of Colonel Corso's claims that it was reverse engineered and made to make fiber optics and integrated circuits, Kevlar, night vision goggles, and things like that?
Well, you know, I suppose there might be some truth to that. I tell you, I have to be a little skeptical about all the reverse engineering on this, because I think that it takes a certain amount of technology to reverse engineer something. So I'm not sure our technology is advanced enough to really get a whole lot of information from this. It'd almost be like giving a digital wristwatch to Da Vinci and telling him to reproduce it. I don't think he could do it.
Right. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is none other than Jesse Marcel Jr., who, with Linda Marcel, has written a book called The Roswell Legacy, The Untold Story of the First Military Officer at the 1947 Crash Site. I have got about, let me see, I've read probably 10 books on Roswell, and this is absolutely one of the best. It's outstanding, and I highly recommend it. It's a very, very moving story. And Jesse, I want to ask you, what compelled you to write this book?
Well, you know, I wanted to try to get my dad's credibility established. And, I waited a long time to write it. And as a matter of fact, I started writing it when I was serving in Iraq. I thought that, you know, I better start writing this book now because, you know, mortality was all around me. I thought, you know, I may not be around tomorrow to even get this thing off the ground. So I started writing it out there, and I completed it when I got back home. And essentially, I wanted to clear the air about my dad's credibility, because there's been so many people who, were down on him. They said he wasn't who he was, that he had no knowledge or no training to establish what he said. And this book clears the air.
Right. Well, would you say that his involvement in the whole incident was a positive thing for him? I mean, how did it change his life, his emotions? And
well, you know, he was kind of kept it to himself. I don't think it outwardly, I didn't see any change in him. He might have just been keeping it to himself, though. I know for me, what it did was make me very interested in astronomy and cosmology, because I realized that there's inhabited solar systems out there. So it changed my life in that regard. But as far as my dad, I'm not sure it had any outward effect on him. It was nothing that it seems to be. He didn't become morose or angry or anything like that, at least to my knowledge.
Wow. So when did this start becoming, you know, when did you start getting asked to do interviews, and how has this changed your life, and what has that been like for you?
I'm sorry, you know, the connection is not good. Would you repeat that, please?
Sure. I mean, before you were living a life of pretty much complete anonymity, and then suddenly this Roswell incident hits the news, and your phone starts ringing, and people are asking you to do interviews and speak at conventions. I mean, when did this happen, and how did that change your life?
Well, you know, my dad died in 1986, and until that time, he was only catching of all these interviews and things like that. You know, he went out to New Mexico at the behest of a TV station in New Orleans, and he was the one who was being interviewed, and it kind of stayed away from me. But when my dad died, then that's when I started getting caught by all this.
Oh, wow. So you've spoken in a wide variety of places and media?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just got back from Germany giving a little talk to a group out there in Regen, Germany, because the Germans are quite interested in what happened out there.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, how do you think people are receptive to this, the idea of the Roswell UFO crash? Do they believe your story?
I think the ones I've talked to are very positive about this. I've not run into anybody who was totally negative about this or doubting my word or anything like that. So they seem to respect what I say. So again, I have not run into any real negativity concerning my character, my basic knowledge, you know, my honesty and things like that. So that's been a plus for me.
Wow. And how has this affected your wife?
Well, the same way. You know, she kind of, you know, she wrote a little bit in the book about how it's affected the family, how, you know, our kids might have been a little upset about knowing that there's others out there, but they gradually accepted it and they're living their lives, you know, like normally. I mean, it didn't drastically change our life. I will say one thing that people did ask, you know, people have asked me, well, what did this do to your religious feelings? Well, actually, it reinforced my feelings about the existence of a creator. It just made me realize that he created a lot more than just us. And as a matter of fact, the Pope just released a blurb about that it's okay to believe in extraterrestrial life and still be a Christian, still be a religious person.
Wow. So would you say it's a fair statement that your children and grandchildren? Do your children believe in UFOs then because of your involvement in this incident?
Yeah. There's no doubt in their mind.
Oh, wow. So this has had a profound effect on your family in many ways.
Well, it's made us more open to a lot of things, I guess. It opened us up to the possibility, or not the possibility, but the fact is that we're not by ourselves, that our civilization is being visited by others, and they're not frightened by it because obviously these interests in civilizations mean no harm to us, because if they did, we wouldn't be here now. And my personal feeling is that they're launching scientific probes, you know, to investigate how this primitive civilization is doing with itself.
Right. Well, that brings my next question up, which is, what do you think about the alien abduction phenomena? And I mean, did your dad ever talk about that either? I know it wasn't very popular.
No, he never mentioned anything like that. Personally, I feel that, well, it's possible, I suppose. I have to accept that maybe it is happening. Rarely, you know, where they, you know, if these are scientists, you know, visiting us, they probably would be interested in us too, you know, physically. And so I suppose it's possible in that regard. These are conducted examinations of this primitive civilization here.
Right. Well, what do you think is the best evidence that we have that the Roswell incident actually happened? I mean, we've got testimony from, how many witnesses is it now? 400? 500?
The best evidence for the Roswell? Is that the question?
Yeah. What do you think is the best evidence that this incident really did happen? Is it the eyewitness testimonies?
I think testimony from people like me and others. You know, unfortunately, there's not too many firsthand people still alive, but there's been a lot of interviews and a lot of information gleaned from people who know what I know. And I think the fact that the government's trying to protest this so much, you know, strenuously, I think that engenders some truth to the thing also, because they protest this too much. You know, if they just leave it drop, you know, I think it, yeah, that might help it go away, but they keep bringing it up.
Right. Well, there's also the Rainey telegram, right, which
you
put a copy of in your book.
Absolutely. You know, when you look at that picture of my dad holding this fake wreckage there, that shows you one thing as a radar target, obviously, because there was even a balloon envelope in the background to reinforce the fact that this was just simply a weather balloon thing. But in one of the photographs, General Rainey is holding a telegram, and through computer enhancement, some of the words in the telegram can be seen, and there are words like victims, you know, the crashed object, and words to that effect, like there's a crash here, there are victims. And in the crash of a weather balloon, there are no victims.
Right.
So what else would he be talking about?
That's pretty darn good evidence there.
Yeah, I think so, too. It just so happened that when Bon Johnson took the photograph, he was the photographer for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. The telegram was facing the camera, and he had a pretty good sharp focus on the camera there.
Right. Well, you know, there's been a lot written about Roswell and other UFO crashes in that area at that time. What do you think of all these other witnesses? I mean, like Frank Kaufman, is that his name? He's a controversial witness, and Barney Barnett, or Grady, I forget all their names, but there's certainly a lot of controversial witnesses out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversial witnesses, you know, and some I have to take a little grain of salt with as far as your credibility, but I know what I saw.
That you can't deny.
I can't deny what I saw, no.
Well, you also have a very interesting, intriguing section in your book, in which you talk about an experience you had with a government official, an anonymous government official who, in some sense, confirmed this whole incident for you as well. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, what happened with that is that, you're right, a government official did confirm the fact that Roswell was, quote, not fiction, in his words. How this turned out about, I was going to a meeting in Washington, D.C., and my office secretary intercepted a call from this gentleman who wanted to talk to me, and he knew I was going to go to this meeting. So he said, when you come to Washington, I want to talk to you. So I said, okay. And so when I got to Washington, there was a message on the phone in my room that I was to call him. So I called him, and he said, I want to see you tomorrow in the Capitol building, or maybe days later. I'm not sure what time on this is, but he wanted to see me before I left. So I went up to the Capitol building, and this gentleman was very nice, and he's on first-name basis and things like that. And he said, I understand that you saw something in Roswell. I said, yeah. And he said, well, let's go talk about that. And he asked me, did I want to talk in a secure room? And I said, well, secure room doesn't matter to me, because I'm not going to say anything I hadn't said already before. But he said, I might tell you something. So what we did, the secure room was in the about two or three levels below the floor of the Capitol building, you know, in a big, huge meeting room. And when we walked into the room, there's this large desk there with a book on it. He sat at the head of the desk, I sat at the side. The book was entitled Majestic. It was actually a fictional account of the Roswell event written by Whitley Strieber. And he said, this is not fiction. And I said, you know, I know Roswell is not fiction. And he said, well, you tell me all about that. So I did. I divulged what I said and, you know, what I've been talking about. And I asked him, well, when are you guys going to turn the wreckage loose or let people know what really happened out there? And he said if it was up to him, he would have done it yesterday, but it wasn't up to him. So, but anyway, he did confirm the fact that this was not fiction, that it really did happen, and they're still not going to divulge it to the public yet.
Well, did you ever find out who this official was?
Yeah. I'm not sure he's still with the government. He may be retired by now, because that was a number of years ago.
Right, but so he was a legitimate guy then?
I'm sorry?
He was a legitimate character, I mean, he was...
Yeah, he was in the government there. He identified himself as being a member of the NSC, National Security Council, or NSA, I'm not sure which now at this point, but he was in one of those groups.
Right, right. Well, you know, there are several other people who claim to also have handled the wreckage, like Frankie Rowe, and there's a lot of other first-hand witnesses. Have you had an opportunity to meet with some of the other prominent witnesses to this whole incident?
Oh, I think I might have, bumped into them occasionally, but that's rare.
So you haven't, had a reunion where you guys all get to...
I've seen them on interviews and things like that more than I have when I've talked with them.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So, if these ETs, do you think that they're friendly? And, I mean, would you want to meet one?
I don't think they're, I think they're probably just totally objective. You know, they're not out to hurt us. They just want to find out more about us. But I don't think they really mean us any harm as far as that goes, because, again, they've been keeping an eye on us for maybe thousands of years, and we're still here, so I don't think they're harmful, but probably just scientific interest in us.
Have you ever had an opportunity to visit the actual Roswell crash site?
No, I've been out to the ranch, I've not been out to the debris field where my dad was. As a matter of fact, my dad had gone back out to the debris field years later, and I asked him jokingly, well, was there any of this wreckage still out there? And his words were, no, they vacuumed that place up. They would make sure that there's nothing left out there for people to see.
Go on.
If it was just a weather balloon or a radar target, I don't think they vacuumed the place up, so to speak.
Right. Well, there's still the History Channel, I think it was, or someone went out there not too long ago, and it's still looking for pieces of it. And this is, the single biggest UFO case that we got going on, and it's not going to go away. And I think it's going to be the one that breaks open this cover-up eventually.
Well, I hope so.
So have you had a real good reaction to your book? I mean, it's an outstanding book.
People have been interested in it. I'm not sure, if people want to buy an autographed copy, they can get it from my website, jessemarcelsenior.com. That's jessemarcelsr.com. They can get an autographed copy of that, or they can get it through Amazon or Barnes & Noble and places like that. But there's been a lot of interest in it, sure.
Well, why do you think people still remain skeptical of not only Roswell, but, the UFO phenomena in general?
Well, I don't know. I guess, people have to be shown, Missouri's got to prove it to me, show me state. But I think there's a natural skepticism there. As a matter of fact, had I not seen what I saw, I would probably be in that group. I'd be very skeptical about that.
Right. Well, people always tell me the stars are too far away from each other.
Yeah.
And how could one...
Yeah, that's been the major reason for doubting it. Well, they couldn't get here from wherever they come from, but these guys are a lot further advanced than we are, with their technology. So they've obviously been able to conquer interstellar travel.
Right, right. And you talked about in your book, you have a chapter all about, how we're investigating this type of stuff ourselves.
Yes.
Magnetoplasma rockets and that sort of thing.
Well, I think the proof of the principle is there. We've done that. So all it takes now is just engineering, but it may take a couple hundred years worth of engineering before we can do that.
Right. Well, what did you think about Stephen Schiff, the New Mexico congressman, when he tried to get, proof, government papers that this incident happened and was largely unsuccessful? I'm sure you're a little deep.
Well, that was very curious, because all the records from the airbase from that time frame were destroyed or just not available. So I think that's part of the cover-up. I think they just got rid of the records or put them under lock and key where no one could get to them.
Right. Well, when the first book came out, it was, I think, by William Moore and Charles Berlitz. Did that bring any media attention to your father?
Oh, he's quite interested. He bought the book, of course, and read it, because I know that, you know, he thought he was proud to be part of the story at that point. But again, I was not at the house. I was out of the house by that time, so I didn't really talk to him about that.
Right. Have you read a lot of books about Roswell? I mean, do you buy all the books that are being published about it?
Well, you know, some of them, you know, I read some of Stanton's books, which are good, I think, and but I don't go out of my way to really read these books anymore.
Right. But you are being asked to do a lot of interviews and stuff lately, so there's a lot of interest in this.
Yeah, there sure is. Yeah, there's a lot of people calling up wanting me to talk about it, just like you are tonight.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our show. We have about 5 minutes left. I want to give you a chance to let our listeners know anything, or, you know, give you a chance to talk about anything that we haven't already covered already. But we've covered quite a good deal. So it's an amazing story. I mean, to have this has become a pretty big part of your life. And
it didn't alter my life itself, except for the fact that it did make me interested in astronomy and cosmology, and I realized that from an 11-year-old kid on till now, that that there's other civilizations out there, and I just accepted, you know, that's just the way it is.
Right. Well, it is truly an amazing story, and I'm totally expecting to see the Roswell craft in a museum, you know, within a decade, or hopefully, you know, not much longer than that.
Well, let's hope so. You know, I keep waiting, but I might wait in vain. But again, if it's released, fine. If not, I already know what it was. So I just accept that. I've lived with that conclusion for many years now.
Right. Well, it's interesting. And you had no harassment or anything from the government, you know, after releasing your story or talking about it?
No, not at all. They wouldn't dare.
Right. Well, it'd probably just make more confirmation anyway that this incident is real. But, you know, there continues to be a cover-up. I mean, there was a recent sighting in Stephenville, Texas, and the government did not react well. There was a guy who claims he was threatened and told to keep quiet about his sighting, a very close-up sighting he had, and the military was caught lying again. They said that their jets were there, and they said that they weren't there, and so they kept changing their story. So the government is still clearly interested in this subject, and they have the craft somewhere. It's being studied somewhere, I presume.
Absolutely.
Well, it's a very interesting time in this field. I think that it's very volatile, and we're going to be seeing some big changes. And I can't imagine what's keeping this cover-up continuing. I mean, it's leaking like a sieve. Wouldn't you say it's been a complete failure? You know what I mean? Would you say the government cover-up has been a success?
Well, no, I think I'm not sure it's convinced everybody that this didn't happen, but because there's a lot of controversy about this, and I think the more the government tries to cover it up, the more people believe it really did happen, you know.
Right.
So I think the best thing the government could do is just drop the subject, just stop talking about it.
Right. Well, hopefully they won't do that. I mean,
unless you want to release the total information. You know, if they want to release it, fine. That's what I would be hopeful for. But again, I'm not holding my breath.
Well, maybe someone could start a lawsuit or something and sue the government and force them to release the information.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Well,
yep,
Jesse,
time will tell.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's a very profound story, and you're a part of history. There's no denying it.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure being here. I enjoy talking about it.
All right. Well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Jesse Marcel Jr., who with his wife, Linda Marcel, has written a book called The Roswell Legacy, The Untold Story of the First Military Officer at the 1947 Crash Site. It's a vivid, profound book. It's got like 50 photographs and drawings and things. It's really an outstanding story and one of the best books written about Roswell because it's written by one of the witnesses who is actually there. I've read the book and I can highly recommend it. And you want to give out your website one more time?
Okay, it's jessemarcelsenior.com. And if they want to get a signed edition, I'll be glad to do that for them. But that's jessemarcel, srlikesenior.com.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jesse. That was amazing.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Well, everyone, thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our guest tonight, Jesse Marcel Jr. Go out and buy his book. It's amazing. I hope you can join us next week. And I'll bring on another exciting guest. Until then, have a great evening and a wonderful week. Bye now.